The Brickshaw Arts Hour on Wandsworth Radio, where you listen with your ears and not your mouth.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Brickshaw Arts Hour. I'm Ellie.
I'm Matt.
I'm Strat.
And I'm Alex.
Oh, we all know who we are. We're doing good. We're on top of the world. It is almost time for the Edinburgh Fringe to unveil itself in all its glory. Yeah, so we've got lots of interviews coming up with people who are taking shows up to the Fringe. We've also got an art that Strat and Alex are going to do. And of course, we've got a lovely film review from Matt Boothman.
Yeah, coming up.
Coming up. So, to start with, let's have a quick chat about what we're going to set you guys on task for today.
Yeah, so this was Matt's thing.
Suggestion. He didn't invent this.
No. Sadly, he is not the genesis of the particular art. So. In my mind, it is, because I'd never heard of it before.
Neither
he said,
I.
How about I do this? What is it? Cut out?
So it's called the cut-up technique. Or découpé, if you want to get continental about it.
Yeah.
It is,
which we do.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolument, yeah. I should say.
Mais oui.
Traceable back to the Dada surrealist movement.
Right.
It is basically, in essence, the technique is you take something that exists and you cut it up and rearrange it to make a new thing.
Right.
And it being popularised by the Dadaists, it doesn't have to make sense. It just has to be different.
They weren't you're big into logic.
You're putting a different slant on the thing you're changing. So it's a very postmodern thing as well.
Ooh.
It had a bit of a revival in the 50s and 60s with the post-pomo movement. That is the technique. And what we've given you to découpé is a couple of copies of the Evening Standard.
This evening's Evening Standard.
Just to level the playing field, you've both got the same edition.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you're working with the same source material, and we'll see what different things you come up with.
So you'll hear some furtive rustling throughout the recording as the chaps go through and cut out some prime words or whatever. And Matt and I will carry on the show as normal until 30 minutes have passed.
Yeah, and keep an eye on Blackshaw's Twitter and Instagram for some pictures of work in progress and the finished things.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll take a picture right now. Don't stop, though. Don't stop the show for that. That would be
inappropriate. Well, I mean, that kind of is what happened there.
Ellie can multitask.
See, I can't. I've stopped. I'm talking now, so I can't
do anything. I'm a lady.
Whoa. She's a lady.
Copyright.
It's fine.
Less than 30 seconds, right?
Yeah.
I think that would probably count as a satire version of, anyway. If it's a parody, it doesn't count. Okay.
Really?
No, that's the law. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, and anything apparently you sing by default is parody. So.
Hey, we use singing voices.
Hey. That's just rude, right?
Okay, so we're gonna move the microphone slightly away from the rustlers. Rustling sheep today, they are. And, Bat Movement, we're going to do a little bit of this.
The Matt Boothman film review. So good, I put my trousers back on.
What are you reviewing for us today?
I'm reviewing The Beguiled.
That is an excellent title for a film.
Yeah. Have you seen the trailer?
I have. I want to see it.
Yeah, it's based on a novel by Thomas Cullinan. There was a previous film version in 1971.
Oh, right.
Directed by Don Siegel, starring Clint Eastwood.
Was it one of those films where, because it was made in the 70s, it was like, because it's obviously a period thing, but did they do it so it's like period, but you can tell it's in the 70s?
I don't know. I've not seen I haven't seen the original. But this is Sofia Coppola's revival of the story.
Yeah.
With Colin Farrell in the Clint Eastwood part.
Mm-hmm.
And a star cast of Nicole Kidman, Kirsten Dunst, Elle Fanning, and then some good younger performers as well.
Great.
So it's set in the kind of at the tail end of the American Civil War. So the North against South slavery-based war. It's set in a girls' boarding school in Virginia, in the South, where because the war's been going on, most of the pupils have gone home or sort of been evacuated to somewhere safe, but a few of them are left got under the tutelage of just a couple of teachers, because they're, for whatever reason, their families have decided that they're actually safer staying at the school than they are coming home or moving on or whatever.
Yeah.
And one of the younger girls comes across Colin Farrell's character, who is a soldier from the north.
Mm-hmm. But they're in the south.
Yeah. So he's wounded, but she helps him back to the school, back to shelter, and from there ensue various sort of moral dilemmas. So they decide he's an enemy combatant.
Yeah.
So that obviously raises tensions, and actually raises tensions for the audience, because to all of the characters that we're kind of introduced to, he is an enemy. But from our vantage point at the, like, further ahead in history, we know that he's on the right side of history, and they very much aren't.
Yeah.
But he is the one in hostile territory here. So they decide that they're very concerned with the morals and the propriety and piety, and they decide that the thing to do as good Christian women is to nurse him to some extent back to health before they turn him over to their soldiers.
But can they heal his emotional wounds, Matt?
Well, it's a bit more of a kind of emotional thriller than that.
Oh,
so
really?
He is physically dependent. His leg is injured. He can't walk for a lot of it.
Right.
So he's confined to a temporary bed in the music room. But under constant threat of, you know, in a couple of days you'll be turned back over to our soldiers and either taken as a prisoner or hung or something.
Brilliant.
So although he doesn't have the kind of traditional masculine things to fall back on. He can't physically intimidate anybody.
Mm-hmm.
He can't just run away
because
he's physically dependent on his hosts.
Yeah.
So he has to try and secure his position through other means, through
seduction,
through wiles. Mm.
He's his quite masculine a, wiles.
He's quite a wily chap. So
it's Colin Farrell. Yeah. I might fall foul of his wiles.
So he sort of almost divide and conquer, forming romantic overtures to one, more sexual overtures to another, more paternal overtures to some of the younger ones. And then he's a sort of authoritative power struggle with Nicole Kidman's character, who's the headmistress. So they're it's all the interactions are on sort of slightly different axes.
Yeah,
romantic, sexual, authority, all those sorts of
ticking all the boxes.
Yeah, he's he's capable in all these arenas, he discovers. So, weirdly enough, it's a movie with one man and seven or eight women in it that still doesn't pass the Bechdel test.
Oh, you're joking.
It's all about...
chat about him all the time.
It's all about what are the... You know, not passing
the main dilemma, isn't it?
Exactly, and not passing the Bechdel test doesn't necessarily mean a film is bad or not feminist.
Right.
It's more if every film released this year doesn't pass the Bechdel test, then we're in trouble.
Yeah.
Because it's the central dilemma of the film is, what are we going to do with this chap? It's a very slow burner. It's in this southern gothic sort of style where almost that Tennessee Williams kind of feeling where
I know what you mean.
Everything moves at a very languid pace because it's
very
so,
hot there.
Because it's very hot. Yeah. Nobody can do anything because they're just you're stuck to your seat with sweat
all
the time.
Well, I do declare. Fans, self.
There's a lot of those accents.
Amazing.
Not from him. He keeps his Irish accent, but all of the...
Well, he's off of the north rather than the south, isn't he?
Yeah. So it's constantly hot, but actually there's almost a chilliness to the lighting in some of the scenes.
Certainly from the trailer, it looked quite blue and grey.
Yeah. Yeah, there's... some of the outdoor, swamped in sunlight sort of shots are—they're very bright, but it's a cool sort of brightness,
sort of harsh,
which is strange given the climate that it's
interesting
that it's producing. It's a weird little story, really. It's if I just described all the main beats of the plot to you, and I might do this after we've recorded, just as proof of concept, it would sound like a farce. It would sound like the plot of a Carry On film, almost. But the execution means that it's tenser than that. Although it's not, when I said emotional thriller earlier, it's not a thriller in its pacing or its atmosphere. Mm-hmm. It is much more that Southern Gothic languid pace. The tension is more at the scene level than overall. It doesn't kind of ramp up. So there's that central struggle that they have about maintaining propriety in the face of a situation that all those social rules of how to be good Christian women mm-hmm. don't really have this situation isn't really in the rule book.
No, it's not standard.
No, and that because it's a situation where you have teachers and pupils, and the teachers are in a position of authority where they have to perform that propriety as role models and as examples for their for their charges. There is a sense of performance about some of it in some of the scenes where they're deciding what to do. It's almost like a rhetorical debate. Mm. Where they're putting point and counterpoint, which can feel quite stilted and not very natural at mm-hmm. times. So it is all about that performance. And there's a thread of about characterising people as the enemy. So when he's first brought to the estate, he is a northern soldier, he is a red belly, he is the opposing side. But that characterization finds it difficult to hold up to actually sort of interacting with this person as a human being who is injured and vulnerable and uses his wiles in all of these various ways. It is a slow piece of work. It is. I wouldn't say that I loved it.
Okay.
It was a little mannered, mm-hmm. I think, for my tastes. It's everybody putting on a show either for the people that they're supposed to be role modeling for. Or for people that they know, he's putting on a show for people who he knows, either he knows have power over him, or who he sees as a target of somebody he can manipulate. So it's one of these situations where nobody is really being themselves, and nobody is really opening themselves up, and you don't get a sense really of the character underneath. It has to be, the performances are good. As you'd expect from the kind of the caliber of the cast, but it is it's a film that it's difficult to get under the skin of, I think.
It doesn't sound overly riveting.
Yeah, I mean it has incident and it has action and excitement in places, but a lot of it is this. Quite drawn out, quite performative debate over what are the morals of the situation,
right.
And as the situation changes, has the right thing to do in the situation changed now with this new development
mm-hmm.
or not, and who's got the power and who's.
But you don't really
not.
Get to kind of engage a huge deal with the characters themselves. It sounds like
no, that's
they're
was
all
my experience
pieces
of
for
it.
The different opinions and morals.
A little bit.
Yeah.
It's there's something about the premise that made me wonder why the decision to revisit this material.
Yeah.
Because it feels like the underlying it almost hinges on this idea of here is an environment where the women are squirreled away safe and separate from the conflict that's happening around them. And as soon as you bring in a male influence, who also then represents the conflict coming to their door, but the premise seems to be you bring a man into this stable situation of all women, and it's naturally going to erupt into chaos.
Sure.
That it, you know, that he can't help disrupting things, and they can't help having lady feelings about
him. Probably the hormones.
Yeah, which is we talk a lot about kind of gender balance and a little bit about race representation on this show. We don't talk too much about sexuality, but it did strike me that it's a default and almost aggressively heterosexual premise.
That throwing a man in amongst all the ladies is going to create a sexual furore.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
It's a presumption of.
Well, it's presuming they're all heterosexual.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, god damn it, societal norms, you've done it again. Okay, well, I mean, this is probably the most, the most unbothered I've been by a film you've reviewed. I feel like, oh, okay, oh, that's what it's about. Yeah, I don't want to see it, really.
Yeah, unbothered is kind of the term.
Yeah.
I came out of it not feeling particularly deeply moved or that it had shaken any kind of assumption. Or
if you hadn't have been reviewing it for the show, would it have basically never crossed your mind again?
I might have forgotten it already.
Yeah. Which
is a shame, because it is, as I say, we tackle gender balance and all those sorts of things, and it's a prominent female director.
So it had an opportunity.
It's a big release with a big, you know, lots of female names in the cast. It's a super white movie as well, talking about representation and balance.
Yeah, a super white movie about race issues.
In the South in the Civil War would be expected to be, but still.
So Matt Boothman's review for The Beguiled
super is white and aggressively heterosexual.
Yeah, and the quote you
2017
the quote you gave as well was, I might have forgotten it already. So there you go, guys. Nice recommendation for you there.
Definite keeper.
any thoughts about what films are coming up that you might want to see and review for the show?
So I was having a look just before we started recording at things coming out, and I can never seem to trust websites about release dates in this country. But the thing that seems to be coming up is Atomic Blonde.
Oh, what's that?
Oh, I really want to see that film.
Which is a new Charlize Theron movie.
Oh, right.
With looks like James McAvoy in the sidekick role from the trailers.
Okay.
But you know, with the announcement of Jodie Whittaker as the new Doctor in Doctor Who, that we've had a lot of whataboutery on the internet of, oh, what next? A Lady James Bond?
A female Doctor in real life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I've seen Atomic Blonde referenced in as a response to that, what next, a female James Bond comment.
Yeah.
That might be a reductive way of describing what Atomic Blonde is going to be.
Okay. Sounds good. I'm on board.
Yeah.
Unless it's set in the 80s, which looks really cool as well. The soundtrack, just from the trailer,
looks
pretty
nice.
Yeah. That would be one of the few things that after all this furore will eventually die down over the female Doctor, is the fact that Someone said to me, like, oh, I really want to see a female James Bond, and that he's one of the few characters that I think would not work as a woman, because he's kind of set up as a deeply chauvinist, unpleasant man.
Yeah.
That's kind of his shtick.
Yeah.
So to change that, you've kind of removed the character. But with Doctor Who, I haven't watched a great deal of it, but he's never really...
Well, it's set up as a character that at his heart is that they can change.
Yeah.
And is never set. So yeah, I definitely take your point. And it seems like Atomic Blonde might be the case of, we can't actually make James Bond female, James Blonde.
Yeah.
We can't actually make him a woman, because that would fundamentally undermine the character in some way. But we can have a
completely new character.
We can have a new character who is a lady spy who sleeps around and shoots people. So
sure.
Why not?
Sounds good. Well, I'm looking forward to going to see Dunkirk, which has just come out.
Yep.
I also want to see, I don't know if it'll be good, maybe it'll be terrible, but it's called Rough Night.
I've seen trailers for this.
And it's got Kate McKinnon and Scarlett Johansson and Zoe Kravitz and lots of other fantastic ladies in it. And it's it looks really silly.
Yeah, it looks like it's almost like a gender flipped The Hangover.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's what that.
But less gross out, yeah. I think. Kind of, I don't know, it looks funny. I just like anything Kate McKinnon's in.
Yeah.
Someone's got a bit of a crush on Kate McKinnon.
Maybe.
Is it The World?
Yeah,
because it should be.
I think it is. Great. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Matt. Now we're going to dive into some Edinburgh content. So, up first, this is an interview we did with Dave Bibby. Dave. Lovely to have you with us. Can you please give us a bit of a rundown of the show that you're taking to Edinburgh?
Yeah, so, hi everyone. The show's called Nobody Puts Bibby in the Corner. I guess it's important to know my name's Bibby, Dave Bibby.
That does put that hilarious joke in context.
the show is what I'm calling a one-man variety show. So there's stories, songs, character comedy, a little bit of stand-up, and quite a lot of audience interaction as well. Similar to what I did at Scare Slam, getting people out of the audience to sort of play parts in my story, which means every show is kind of individual and unique in its own special way.
And it's worth noting for anyone who's a bit scared of interactive theatre experiences that Dave is very gentle.
Yeah. I always say to anyone when they get up on stage, I won't ask you to do anything that I wouldn't do. I have done some weird stuff.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't know how much that puts people at ease, I'll be honest.
But I don't know, that old school thing. I always hear people coming in and they go, don't sit in the front row. Don't sit in the front row because he chooses people. And I'm watching and whoever those people are, they just get chosen. That's exactly what I want. I want people slightly scared, but then to put them at ease. You don't want someone uber confident. There's no kind of drama. There's nothing to lose there.
Also, they might steal the show from you, which would be upsetting and devastating as a performer. Yeah.
They always do. They always steal the show. And that's kind of what I like. Make the audience a star. I think it's good fun.
That's good. And tell us like when and where your show is happening.
So it's on at the Underbelly, Cowgate, every day at 3:40 p.m. apart from Tuesday the 15th, because that's just a non-starter.
That's a rest day.
Yeah, so one rest day. So yeah, every day for the whole month. And I've done all sorts of shows over the years. And I'm in a sketch group and we've played the same room at the Underbelly before, but this is the first time going full solo to Edinburgh. So I'm excited and nervous and very realistic about how quiet it's going to be for the first week.
And how broken you'll be by the end, I assume.
Absolutely. I promised to pace myself, but I'm also thinking, might get a couple of beers for the train, so I don't know if I'm going.
Good. Yeah, I mean, that is totally the right mindset.
Start as you mean to go on.
Yeah, definitely. It's a celebration. Well, you know, that's what it's all about. It's a festival.
So what's the sketch group that you're in?
So, Lead Pencil. And the sketch group Lead Pencil, we did a couple of years in Edinburgh at the Underbelly, as well as some other bits and bobs and some Radio 4 stuff and a bit of Comedy Central Online and things like that. We described ourselves as sort of Art Attack meets Saved by the Bell. Just really 90s inspired. We hosted the show as 90s kids TV characters. Nice. We were highly inappropriate and we made all the props, so everything was homemade and 2D. So Lead Pencil was sort of a joining of the kind of the art side of things, which I didn't, to be honest, didn't do much of. There were two girls who could sing and dance and act, and they made these incredible props and beautiful things. And I just drew willies on them, really.
Yeah, well, that sounds like pretty standard gender-specific division of duty.
Were they good ones, though? Did you put time and effort into them? Because as long as you've done that, it's okay.
Not really, no.
Oh, no!
The only kind of detail was disgusting detail.
Delightful, delightful. So what's, how do you feel about going and doing a solo show as opposed to a group show?
Well, I'm running out of excuses if it doesn't go well, because I've written it, I've rehearsed it, and, I mean, I have a director and everything, but it's very, very nerve-wracking, because, and it, you know what, it's exactly why I'm doing it. As an actor and a comedian, I do all sorts, and I've had, you know, been performing in big theatres and not felt any nerves at all, and yet when I started developing the show, I did a work in progress way back in February, 2nd of February at the Hackney Attic, and I was so nervous, and there's only like 40 people or something like that, and I was so unbelievably nervous, because it was my show. If it wasn't good, it was my fault. And so I'm really scared about going solo, but the right kind of scared you want as a creative person. If you get too comfortable, actually, this is something that comes up in the show, but if you get too comfortable, then you're not doing art. You're just making money.
Ooh, that's very deep and an interesting talk point for our show. So thank you for throwing that in.
Yeah, it's a swing from the penises, isn't it?
did you feel like you had a level to kind of rise back to just then?
Yeah, I said it's a variety show, which just means it's whatever pops into my head. So it could be profound or it could be absolutely
profane. Yeah.
Horrible.
So is your show probably not suitable for children?
Actually, I've taken all the swearing out of it. Just because there wasn't much anyway, and it's real slapstick and silliness. I do occasionally swear because I improvise, and sometimes, you know, but generally there's none in there. And even where in some of the songs where there was the odd bad word, it's been replaced with either a funny alternative or just sort of, I just kind of literally just blank it out. So there is content kind of adult, but yeah, it's almost could be a kid's show in some way, I think. So I think I've put it at 14 plus.
Okay, that's very responsible of you.
Yeah, that's the kind of guy you're dealing with.
You should put that on the posters. Very responsible.
Very responsible. Yeah, I love the young man.
Sell loads of theatre tickets, comedy tickets, on the basis of being responsible and lovely.
Yeah. Because that's what we want from our creatives and our rock stars and comedians.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's probably not the best way to go.
The title is a Dirty Dancing reference. The poster image is a Dirty Dancing reference. What can fans of Dirty Dancing expect? Do you think they'll enjoy the show?
They can expect disappointment. Never seen that film. Like, I'm totally aware that people are going to come and see the show because of the Dirty Dance and stuff. I had thought about trying to tie it in, but at the end of the day, it's a very silly show of silly things that made me laugh, and the title is A Silly Thing That Made Me Laugh.
Plus, you might just sell more tickets to... I mean, you might end up with just substantial audiences of teenage girls who like the film.
Well, it would have been... girls who were teenagers when the film came out.
Good point. Okay, middle-aged
women. Older ladies.
That is my market, actually.
Mums. Mums is your market.
Yeah. Single mums.
Single mums. Good. Good. So wholesome.
So how are you going to be selling the show when you're up there? Are you going to be are you going to be up and down the Royal Mile with flyers clenched in your buttocks? Like, what's your selling gimmick?
Well, now I am. Now I'm that has got to happen. You know what? I think there's on my to-do list. In fact, I'll put it right here. What, there it is. Yeah, brainstorm publicity stunt. That's generally on my to-do list right here, where I'm sat. I have no ideas of what to do at the moment. I think the best way of selling a show is selling it yourself. But I'll get a couple of flyers to help me. And then I'll try and think of any other possible way. Social media helps, I think.
Yeah, I think flyering was always my least favourite part of taking a show to the festival.
Yes, it's very trying, isn't it?
It's just soul-destroying.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to do as little as possible, but I'm fully aware that I can probably sell the show better than people that I picked up and said, hey, here's some money to give out paper with my face on it.
So, what, I mean, are there any other shows going on in Edinburgh that you are willing to struggle up a cobbled hill to get to see? Like, is there anything else you're looking forward to trying to catch while you're there?
You know what? I haven't had a chance to properly look through that brochure and get excited about things. There's another very silly comedian called Spencer Jones who has a character called the Herbert. And again, it still fits in the comedy part of the brochure, but it, for kind of theatre fans and just fans of entertainment, I think he's great because he's sort of Mr. Bean sort of thing. He does all sorts of prop stuff and silliness, and I love going to see him because I think he's just sort of a dying breed of that kind of comedy. But I see so much comedy because I sit at the back of comedy clubs and comedy nights waiting to go on. And so I'm always more excited to see circus and theatre stuff. I'm not sure that I've got any great tips on that. So my friends in Fleabag, go and see that because that's coming back again.
Oh, cool.
Just the final week of the festival, Fleabag at the Underbelly. And that was such a big hit a few years ago. And obviously it's gone on to be a successful show and a TV show and they're doing another series. But yeah, go back and see one woman tell the story brilliantly on stage. I can't beat it. It's really good theatre.
That's a great tip. Thanks, Dave. And the Edinburgh Fringe app is now out, so you can get browsing on that for an easy way to decide what shows you want to go see.
Yeah, actually, that is the future, that app.
It feels a lot more manageable than the giant catalogue of dreams, which is the Fringe guide in hard copy. So.
It's easier to scroll through than turn the pages on those dreams, isn't it? Sometimes.
It is, and it's also good for finding offers, was what I found when I was up in the festival a couple of years ago, because you can literally be like, shows near where I am right now because I have a spare hour and that have an offer on them, please, and it will come up on the app, so that's quite easy.
Yeah, that is good, actually. Yeah, you want sort of time and location is pretty much everything, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, you'll sit in a beer garden going, oh, let's just chill. And then it starts raining and you go, let's go see a show.
Yeah. Well, we hope you have a fantastic Fringe and we may well be in touch during the Fringe to see how you're getting on.
Definitely, anytime. Hopefully I'll see you guys soon.
All right. Thanks very much, Dave.
Thanks.
Bye.
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 So that was Dave talking to us about his show Nobody Puts Bibby in the Corner, which is playing at the Underbelly, Cowgate, that's venue 61, at 3:40 p.m. throughout the festival.
Sounds great.
It does sound great.
I chuckled at the name again then, even though I heard
even
it.
Even though you were there for the full interview.
I knew it weeks earlier.
It is a very good title. And we're going to dive straight into another one. I'm loving the diving today. Such diving. I'm wearing my swimming cozy. This is an interview with Richard Stott. So Richard, tell us a little bit about yourself and the show, please.
Okay, so I'm a professional actor. Have been for, maybe 10 years or so now. Now, the show is called Wretched, A Thing of Poor Quality. That's its full title. And it's about my experiences as an actor with a form of disability, because I've got a thing called Poland syndrome, which, see my left hand?
Yeah.
Okay, so the left hand, I was born with a completely malformed left hand and had loads of operations to kind of improve the function of it and improve the look of it a bit. So in real life, I'm not disabled. But when you go into the acting world and you're holding your hands up in front of a camera, you, in their eyes, become disabled sometimes.
Right.
Now, I've decided to tackle all of these issues with humour. So it's a theatrical comedy with stand-up comedy, dramatised scenes, and even a bit of music in it. So it's got issues in it, but it's all very light-hearted.
Great. And is it kind of in the form of stand-up?
Yeah, I would say this is it's almost a stand-up sort of cabaret performance. However, I do reenact quite realistically scenes from my real life. Notably, a couple of castings that I've had where the issue of my hand has come up. So there is a lot of essentially what it is sort of acting, because I feel like I'm playing a character the whole time I'm doing it.
When and where is the show playing?
When it goes up to Edinburgh, I'm going to be on at Just the Tonic at the Caves, and it's doing the full run from the 3rd till the 26th, and it's going to be on at 12:05 p.m.
Have you done the full run at the Fringe before?
It's my first ever go at this. It's my first ever go at this. And, you know, I've heard so many stories from different actors, comedians who've been up there, so I feel like I know what to expect. I think the best thing to do is not to expect anything.
Okay, so I was going to ask, are you doing any preparation, or have you got like a survival regime? But it sounds like maybe you're just going to take it as it comes.
I have to, yeah. That's it. I've just got to. I think, like, with the best times I've ever had in my life, I've gone with no expectation and just gone along with the ride. If it's bad, I don't get that disappointed, and if it's good, it's a lovely surprise.
So that was Richard talking to us about his show Wretched, which is on at Just the Tonic at the Caves, that's venue 88, at 12:05 p.m. throughout the festival.
Sounds exciting.
We've got lots of Edinburgh friends, haven't we? So next up, this is Anna Marsland talking to us about her shows.
Ballistic is a solo show about a young man growing up from age 12 to 19 who struggles with lots of the insecurities that young men might deal with growing up. Anger, feeling like an outsider, but then he goes on to commit a mass shooting, and this play invites the audience to consider what happened, what was the factor that caused him to go on to do this, and where might there have been a change, where might someone have been able to stop this from happening. And the play doesn't provide any of those answers, but it hopefully offers a provocation to the audience and touches on lots of different factors. So it includes his inability to talk to friends and family about his difficulties, his mental health. It touches on pornography and sexuality. It touches on his need for fame, his obsession with social media, filming himself, his desire to immerse himself in a world of gaming, and the communities that he finds online. It touches on things like men's rights activism, misogyny, things like Return of Kings and that online community that he finds there. He first made the show last year and performed it at Brighton Fringe for a couple of shows, and since then it has developed. We had a run in London in March. Recently we took it to the Offbeat Festival in Oxford, and every time we have learnt something from performing the show for an audience and seeing their reaction, because it's just a one-man play and so much of this is in dialogue with the audience. It's been really fascinating to see where their responses are, when they turn against this character, when they like him, when they laugh with him, when they feel disgusted by him. So we're really looking forward to, now that we've developed even more, sharing it with an Edinburgh audience. We're really looking forward to seeing Brutal Cessation by Millie Thomas, Tumble Tuck by Sarah Milton, Testosterone by Roman Clay, and The Curse of the Mummy by Last Chance Saloon. You can see Ballistic at Pleasance This, which is in the Pleasance Courtyard, from the 2nd to the 28th of August at 2:15 p.m.
off the back of that interview, a quick Strat and Alex do an art update. I can exclusively reveal that Strat has been and got himself a pen.
Yeah.
Dun, dun, bah.
I don't know if that's strictly within the rules of the cut-up technique, Strat.
I don't know.
I think it is.
I think probably a Dadaist would agree with you.
I think they would.
I think they'd be like, hey, there's no rules here.
Yeah.
Or something.
Tip at you and go.
I think they probably wouldn't answer. Yeah. They wouldn't answer the question asked. They would maybe do a cat impression and jump on your head.
And Alex has got lots of bits and is arranging them like some kind of scrapbook maniac.
I really have no idea what I'm doing.
Well, I mean, I think we need to be able to read it out.
I didn't realise... I don't know. I think it could be a thing that we just look at. Maybe.
Yeah, that's really good
for radio. We can describe it. What I should have anticipated this when I suggested it as an art, and somehow I didn't, that they do look a little bit like crazed serial killer blackmailers.
Yeah.
Sorting out their ransom
money. Or kidnappers.
Look like.
Appear to be. Allegedly.
Allegedly might be.
Yeah.
But definitely aren't.
No.
Because That would be a bad thing.
That
we
would
are
be bad.
Ellie and I are not being held hostage. We're here of our own free will.
We love it here.
Read the next bit.
I would hold up a picture of myself with today's newspaper, but Strat and Alex have cut them all up.
Okay. Well, you've got another few minutes, chaps. Now we're going to be talking to Christopher Woodley.
Hello, I'm Chris. I'm from Python Theatre Company. This year we're taking the soft subject, a love story, up to the Edinburgh Fringe Festival. We're going to be performing at the Bailey Room at the Assembly Hall at 4:25 p.m. The soft subject, a love story, is about love, heartbreak and The Little Mermaid. The show's been developed with Shoreditch Town Hall, Greenwich Theatre and the Arts Depot, and it's our debut at the Fringe.
Fabulous. So are you new to the Fringe yourself?
So, about 10 years ago, I did, my partner at the time was a theatre producer, so I did lots of flyering for a number of different theatre shows. And then I was working as a teacher at the time while he was a theatre producer. And then about 5 years ago, I quit teaching and trained as an actor. And I first went to Edinburgh about 3 years ago with Lost Watch Theatre Company and did a show called Kate, which was amazing. And it won the NSDF Award, which led us on to doing a run at Greenwich and in Iceland. So it won't be my first time performing, it'll be my second, but it is my first time performing a solo show. And a show that's written by me, and it's my company's first time at the festival. So yeah, lots of firsts for us.
Fantastic. And what sort of preparation have you been doing for surviving the festival?
Surviving the festival. I've just been, so for the last 2 weeks, we've actually just been at rehearsal at the Old Vic Workrooms, which has been amazing, getting the show ready and in shape. We did a preview at the Curtain last Tuesday, which was our first London preview, and I've got another one just before I leave back where I'm from in Bromley. So we've had a lovely time at the Old Vic, and we've had a couple of our sort of friends and peers and mentors coming in, seeing the show, giving feedback. But the show's been being developed for almost 2 years now. I wrote it 2 years ago, and I had a fantastic dramaturge work on the project at Greenwich. And then it originally was an autobiographical show with three people, and then it became a solo show last year. And then this past year, it's still remained a solo show. And now it definitely is a solo show because it is just me. So yeah, that's been the process, really.
That's fantastic. And what can you say about the show itself without giving too much away?
So, if you are interested in reminiscing about what it is to be in a drama lesson, then this show's up your street. If you like some nice, energetic 90s pop music, or the Spice Girls, or Disney's The Little Mermaid...
Oh, it sounds right up my street.
Then definitely this show will be up your street. I'm going to be delivering part storytelling, part stand-up, part drama lesson, and I'm also going to be reflecting on love, heartbreak and The Little Mermaid. So that's as much as I can kind of tell you without giving too much of the game away, but we've had a lovely, we've had a lovely year working on the project. The project's also supported by a fantastic charity called MQ Mental Health, and we're being published. So come up to the Edinburgh Festival, see the show, and buy a script for £3.50 afterwards if you're up for it.
It sounds like the production's ticking a lot of our favourite thing boxes over at Blackshaw, so we'll be sure to shout about it. Can you just recap once more the details of how people can go and see the show?
So you can go and see the show. It's www.assemblyfestival.com. We are on at Assembly Hall, the Bailey Room, at 4:25 p.m. The show is 55 minutes. It's Love, Heartbreak, The Little Mermaid, and yeah, we'll be excited to see everyone.
Brilliant. Well, thanks for talking to me, Chris.
No worries. Fantastic. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay, so we are now at the finish line for your task. What's it called?
Découpé.
Découpé.
C'est découpé.
Découpé. Oui.
Oui. Découpé.
Oui.
Dans la nuit.
Découpé.
Okay, good job. So, I'm sitting in front of Alex's creation, which has its visual and words, and we'll be posting the pictures online. But there's like a mashup of faces. There's like top half and bottom half of faces have been swapped. I read it as the viewer of art as a statement on race, and how actually we're all the same regardless of our race. And I think there's a lovely little photo here of some kind of sports person.
It's Chris Froome.
Right, with a child and a cuddly lion.
Yeah, he's just won the Tour de France. Not the child, Chris Froome.
Or the lion.
Or the lion, Chris Froome.
And the words that I can see, the order I would read them in, would be corrupt mayhem, historic broke, trapped pressure, disappoints demolition, ruined live champions, relationships fast grinds. So I guess that's your sort of found poem amongst it.
A sort of view into Alex's fractured psyche.
Yeah. I mean, it says a lot of things.
Yeah.
Good job.
How did you find it?
I found it very difficult because I had no real understanding of where to start or go. So I sort of picked an idea out of my bonce and went with it.
And what was the idea?
The idea was the fact that all the sport images, and in fact all the pictures, seemed quite overtly positive, and it was all the words that were really negative.
Oh, I see. Yeah, okay.
So it's just more of a...
bit of a juxtaposition.
Just a juxtaposition of those things.
Yeah.
And the faces, I just swapped over because I thought, it looks like I can do that, and that'll be, you know,
they
somewhat different.
They match up pretty well.
They don't. Yeah. It's not too bad.
Yeah.
Especially, it's for those who might also be interested in sports, it's a mixture of Lionel Messi and Paul Pogba's face.
Yeah, it's lovely.
So, yeah, you've got the top half of Pogba with the bearded, shouty bottom of Lionel Messi, and then vice versa.
Yeah,
but
great.
Paul Pogba is kind of going ooh with his mouth.
Very central.
Yeah.
Matt, talk us through Strat's creation.
Okay, so Strat's almost has a headline cut up from two the words "the great white farce," but there's a tiny little word that is cut out of the body copy, the word "house," that makes it "the great white house farce."
Oh, political.
And if I were to read the words that Strat's put into his in the order that I see them, it would say Trump, 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 Mr. Trump, Donald Trump, 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 Donald, Mr. Trump, 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 Trump. And he's even added some new Trumps. That was what he got his pen out for. He's given us the crossword, and every five letter across word is Trump.
Yeah.
And there's some pictures. None of them are Trump.
Oh,
you find very interesting.
What does it mean?
Yeah, one of them is, I think, is it Leckie?
Yes.
From the Smart Meters campaign.
Just because he looks like he's terrified of everything below him.
He does look terrified.
Yeah, and I don't know who the other two people are.
I don't
know
who the other two are.
They're two white men.
But they're, yeah, exactly. I was like, could just put any white
could be
kind
Donald
of
Trump.
White.
Ooh, they've been talking about that on the last leg, because on the last leg they pointed out that someone had put the wrong person. They'd put a picture of Stormzy when they were announcing a new signing of a black football player.
Mm. Oh, I think that was Lukaku.
Yes.
Yeah, I swapped Stormzy
and so they've
Lukaku.
Started, when they're talking about white people, just putting random white people pictures up. It's really good.
I also saw one where
the headline was something like second doctor convicted in murder charges.
Is it a picture of Jodie Whittaker?
No, it was a picture of Patrick Troughton, the second doctor.
Yeah. Brilliant.
That's amazing.
You've got to love people.
Yeah, did you do you think you found all of the Trumps in the
yes,
Holy Living
I scoured
standard?
It. Because I just wanted to cut him out of all the news in the paper. Because I find my news feed, particularly online, and then when I saw it on the front like page and then a big double page spread in this, I was like, oh God, him again. So I just kind of wanted to both remove him and kind of just find every instance. I wanted to see how big a piece I could get just by cutting out his name.
Yeah.
And then I added lots of Trump to the crossword just because I feel like he'll get everywhere.
Yeah.
And also, some of the clues were quite appropriate. Other than ludicrously not appropriate to him, which is which is fun.
We've got 35 across, repulse.
Yeah.
Mm.
Trump. 12 across, egg-shaped.
Yeah, I think he's, you know, he's not got the most athletic of physiques.
No.
He's a little bit Dr. Robotnik, isn't he?
He is, yeah.
Just needs the big moustache.
Yeah.
Don't encourage him. Yeah. So
I'm sorry, I chuckled a bit there, and I think I've dislodged some of your Trumps.
That's fine.
That was one of the downsides of this exercise, was that any sort of huffing or puffing resulted in dislodging of your art.
That's not to say that I found it like physically exhausting to do this. It was more that I kept giggling at things that you were saying and upsetting my own work, which was
so there you go,
just
insight.
Nightmarish.
How about, what do we think in terms of merit? Which one are we...
Ooh,
elevating above the other.
I find it. I think this one's really hard because they're so, despite them being the same form,
they're very different.
Strats has a very clear like intention behind it to like cut Trump out of the news,
yeah.
Which is like a really clear thing that you can get your mind around and you can see. Yes, he's achieved that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Alex's is more free form, stream of consciousness, but I think it's still kind of succeeds on those merits. Like, I wouldn't want to call it.
No, well, having heard you say that, I think Alex's is more true to form, isn't it? In terms of the Dada.
Yeah, in terms
sort
of go through the source material, just grab whatever catches your eye and sort of arrange them in a way that other people can impose meaning on.
Yeah, which is exactly what I did. So I think Alex edges it on that basis. For purity of art.
Yeah.
My art is
argument.
Pure.
What ranking does that mean? What's your scores now?
We're now 3-2 to Alex.
3-2.
He brought it back.
Oh,
he's
nudged
back.
Ahead.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right, well,
I wasn't expecting that.
All to play for then.
I know.
Yeah.
And what arts have we got coming up? We've planned our next two arts.
We're definitely doing some photography.
Yeah.
In which I will probably lose out to a certain Richard Stratton due to the fact that he actually like knows what he's doing with a camera and can take photos.
Yeah.
Like in terms of like framing and like composition of shot, I could hold my own, but the problem is I can't hold a camera, so that's the issue.
Was
there.
You holding something?
Okay.
Good. All right. Well, we'll see how we go. If anyone's got any suggestions as to what arts they think Stratton and Alex should be doing, or indeed want to offer any expertise, that is always very welcome. And you can get in touch, and you can also view the arts made thus far on our online outlets. We are at Blackshore Update on Twitter. We are on Instagram as Blackshore Theatre. We're on Facebook, just search Blackshore Theatre. You can find everything you need, as well as our blog, on blackshoreonline.com. And you can indeed subscribe to this show on iTunes with a Blackshore Arts Hour, or whatever medium you use to listen to your podcasts. Thanks for listening. It's goodbye from me.
And from me.
And from me?
Yeah, good job.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, Stratton.
Yeah, once Alex stopped talking, goodbye from me as well.
Okay, right, good. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.